Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And I am joined today by the gorgeous Claire Robbie. Claire is a meditation teacher. She is an advocate for alcohol-free living. She's a partner. She's a mum. She's also a mum-to-be. And she is sober. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so good to connect with you because, like you and I, we kind of move around the same space in terms of promoting alcohol-free living. And we've even popped up, you know, side by side in news stories together. And we've never actually met. So I'm really excited to be talking to you and really grateful.
It's actually kind of weird that we haven't.
I know, but I just value everything that you're doing in this space, and we'll get to, you know, the No Beers Who Cares organisation that you run and stuff later on. But can you just start by telling us what led you to going sober? What was your drinking like?
So my drinking, it's a real process to the point where I stopped drinking completely, and now I haven't had a drink in over 5 years. But I really like to emphasize that it was a process to get there. So it wasn't like an overnight thing for me. And my drinking, I would have called it relatively normal for my teenage years compared to all my friends and what we were doing. Obviously, we did a bit of the old binge drinking and, you know, started experimenting with drugs and that kind of thing from 16, 17. And then at university, I probably would have said my drinking was also relatively normal, maybe even on the not as bad side as many of the people that I hung out with.
Well, I was going to say normal in New Zealand can be quite heavy.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't even, I know when you're surrounded by this culture, you may have a sense that what you're doing potentially isn't healthy or good for you, but if everyone else is doing it, then it really does become something that you just completely get used to. And I suppose my drinking got more and more intense when I moved to Japan when I was about 21 and lived overseas. And I lived in a gaijin house in Tokyo with a whole lot of young men, and I used to go out and party with them a lot. So I really started this work hard, sort of party hard mentality over there. And then I moved to Shanghai and I lived within an expat community. A lot of the people there, a lot of my friends were much older than me. And I kind of kept up with the sort of glamorous Shanghai lifestyle. And I came back to New Zealand when I was 26. And I went to a wedding. And at the wedding, I got drunk like I usually did. This, you know, that's what we did at weddings. And I tripped over and I landed on my own champagne flute and I severed my patella tendon. And it was a really, really serious injury. I couldn't go back to China where I was working.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know about tendons.
No, it's literally the tendon that bends your knee. So I couldn't walk. So I was in a leg cast for 3 months. Wow. It took a hell of a lot of rehab. But that injury was actually a gateway for me into yoga, which further down the track helped me with my drinking. I got married when I was back in New Zealand. And then me and my husband moved to Los Angeles. And I wasn't working in Los Angeles. I couldn't work because I didn't have a green card for almost 3 years. And it was during that time in Los Angeles where I'd had to leave my – I was a – back in New Zealand, I got my first proper job that I really, really loved as a journalist at TV3. And I had to leave that job to move to the States. And when we were in the States, I wasn't working. We were traveling a lot. And we started to get into some really bad habits with our drinking and other substances. And that lasted for a few years. Eventually, I got my green card. I started working over in the States, and I started working at a private rooftop club, which was not dissimilar to Soho House. And I ran all these phenomenally glamorous events.
I can imagine.
And all these things were readily accessible. And so I'd work throughout the day, and then I'd be expected to run these events till like 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And things really started to get out of control for me then. And I got to a point where I knew something had to change, because my mental health started to really deteriorate. And I got into an incredibly dark place, which was very, it was alarming to me, because I had never experienced this before. And there was no talk around drinking and drugs and how they affected your mental health, how they affected the neurochemistry in your brain, anything along those lines. And at the same time, I was in a marriage that was incredibly volatile. And I got to a place.
It sounds like sensory overload. My gosh.
It was. It was really, really intense. And I didn't know. I wasn't even 30 at this stage. And I knew something had to give. Got to a point where things were so bad, and I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't worry my parents. I started having these flashes in the middle of the night, which were panic attacks, where I'd wake up and I just have this thought of, it'd be so much easier to just go to sleep and never wake up. And that was terrifying to me. It was really, oh my God, what's going on? I need to get some help. And then in the course of a month, I literally left my job, left my husband, sort of ventured off into Los Angeles with just my clothes and my car, and had no idea of how I was going to change things, or even, you know, what direction to go. But at the same time as this, a friend of mine was doing a yoga teacher training, and I thought, oh my God, I'll do that with her, because it's on the weekends.
And did you have an inner dialogue at that point about the drinking? Was that sort of a feature of it, or was it more just this chaos of this woman?
For the last 2 months before this point, I'd try and stop drinking for a week,
right,
and I'd never be able to do it. I'd end up, I had such a rubber arm with it. Someone would call me, they'd say, meet us here, and I'd be like, no, I'm going to go for a hike. I'm going to go to the gym. And they'd be like, please, 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 please. And I'd end up going, and, you know, in my head, I'd be like, you'll just have one drink. I'll just have one drink. And then I'd have this massive all-nighter. And I signed up to do this yoga teacher training. And then about 2 weeks before that, I had one of those moments where someone was up at this fancy hotel, come and have a drink with us. I was like, no, I'm going for a hike. I'm not going to go out tonight. Same thing happened. And that night was particularly bad. There are a few things happened that when I woke up the next morning, I was just like, that can never happen again. And I decided to stop drinking. And for whatever reason, I said to myself, okay, you're going to stop drinking for a year. And then a couple of weeks later, I started this yoga teacher training. But it wasn't until I'd made that commitment of, okay, you're going to stop drinking for a year, that I really started to see that alcohol had become a huge part of my life. And I didn't know how to do things without it. Like, I didn't know how to socialize. I didn't know how to relax.
No. I was exactly the same. Things. Didn't know how to be a hostess. Didn't know how to soothe myself. Didn't know how to live, really. And the fear, right? Because I mean, you just think that it has to be involved to make a life fun and full and good, and there's such a fear involved. But it sounds like the alcohol thing coincided with some other lifestyle things, that and entering into the yoga world and just being more in touch, that kind of maybe enriched that whole process of quitting.
It was not until I decided to stop. And I can't even describe the part of me that said, okay, you're going to do this for a year. There was just something in my head that said, you have to try and do this for a year. And I managed to stick to it. And it was really hard. Like, I remember moments where I would go out for dinner. And, you know, this is when you realize, oh, God, I've never been out for dinner in my adult life without having a drink. And I'd sit at the table and I'd have this feeling. And then I realized, oh, that's anxiety. And I realized that I had been drinking to stop certain feelings. And you're right, it coincided perfectly with me starting to learn these ancient practices that are fundamentally about getting to know yourself, and making friends with your whole self. So the good parts, the uncomfortable parts, the scary parts, the parts that you have deep shame around. Yoga, essentially, it's not just, you know, the poses. It's actually a philosophy, a lifestyle, a science. And the purpose of it is to become a fully integrated person.
And when you're drinking, you cannot be in touch with those parts. And this is what I often say to people. This is what quitting's all about. Yes, it's about dealing with cravings and learning how to socialize, but it's really about your relationship with yourself. I had no idea who I was either. I wasn't in touch with myself. How could I be? I've just been pouring this drink in for 20 plus years. So you're kind of forced, whether you're doing a yoga training or not, you are kind of forced when you take the alcohol away to get to know yourself, and it can be painful and hard, right?
Definitely. But I think lots of people don't do that. So lots of people stop drinking and don't take the steps to integrate or understand why they were drinking in the first place. And now that's quite literally what I spend my life doing, is helping people not just give up drinking, but move to a stage in their life where it's not even an issue. Like for me, it's not even in my consciousness. It's only in my consciousness in the sense of the work I do, but in my day to day, it's not even something that I contemplate. But that's taken a real process to get to that point.
So how do you help other people do that, Claire? What do you do to help people go do that work that helps them? You're right. It's not just about the fact that we're not trying to drink every day. It's about the fact that we're learning how to deal with emotional stuff, deal with life, you know, get to know ourselves. Yeah. I mean, there's so much that goes on. How do you help people do that?
Well, it's not simple, and every person has a slightly different process, but at the foundation of what I do is meditation. For many different reasons. But what happened for me when I was in Los Angeles, so I gave up for that year, and then I stayed sober for 2 years, never did drugs again. So it's been 12 years not having done any of that kind of stuff. But after that 2 years, with a consistent meditation practice and with a yoga practice, I had a beer. And then that beer led to a wine. And I vividly remember having the beer and having that wine and being like, this is disgusting. But I pushed on through. And it coincided, interestingly, with me coming back to New Zealand and being a single mum. That's when I started drinking a bit more. And on reflection, and I also was aware of this as I was moving through it, because I had these daily practices, but I was using it as a coping mechanism again. I was desperately unhappy about the breakup of the relationship with my son's father. I was coming back to live in New Zealand after having been away for 8-9 years, and having to kind of start again. And so I just defaulted to the easiest coping mechanism I knew, which was drinking. And
accessible, pushed, you know, even.
Oh my gosh. The accessibility of alcohol is what makes it incredibly dangerous. I was actually just thinking on my walk this morning, I was listening to a podcast, and they brought up alcoholism, and they're talking about how only a really slim percentage of people actually get physically addicted to alcohol. My next thought was, I wonder how many people are emotionally, habitually, socially dependent on alcohol. I wonder how you would even measure that, because I genuinely think it's more people than not, because alcohol has just been marketed, used so freely.
It's crazy. You know,
it's so ubiquitous and readily, easily available that, of course, it's really normal for humans want to find something to soothe themselves. And when you've got something so easy to, you get that feeling, of course it's going to become problematic for lots and lots of people. So for me, after the 2 years and then starting drinking again, there was a little period where I did start drinking again, never to the point that I had been, but it was actually an incredibly powerful period because I had some awareness around it too. So I would see where I was drinking, who I was drinking with, the moments when I really wanted it. And when you have a meditation practice, so the lineage that I practice and teach, I've sat and practiced twice a day for the last 10 years. When you sit with yourself twice a day, it's really hard to do it after you've had a drink. You can't meditate after you've had a drink.
Interesting.
Even if you've had one or two drinks,
yeah,
the next morning when you sit and practice, you can feel it in your body. So my drinking tapered off to the point where it was one New Year's Eve and I'd had one drink and I was surrounded by really drunk people up north at a pub. And I just had this moment of like, why are you doing this? You don't need to do this anymore. And I stopped and I haven't drunk since. And this time, these last 5 years, whilst there have been many periods where, particularly when I get overwhelmed and stressed, I might want the oblivion that alcohol used to give me. Yes, I call it the oblivion. Yeah. But those moments became less and less and less and less and less frequent as I cultivated ways to process my emotions, learned how to, you know, have boundaries, express my needs, and just become a more emotionally resilient human being.
Yeah.
To the point now where I honestly don't even think about it. It's just not something that's in my consciousness. And I think I had these really lovely role models in Los Angeles too, because for a while in Los Angeles, I went to AA and it just never quite resonated with me. And I had this yoga teacher, Tommy Rosen, who was...
Tommy Rosen. Oh my God, Claire. He's amazing.
So I had amazing people around me. There were actually many of my teachers were people who had moved past the label of addict. Yeah. And it just wasn't something they identified with anymore. And that was always in my periphery. It's like, oh, you don't have to get stuck here. Mm. You can move beyond it. And I think with, you know, those people in front of you, and I've had, you know, a lot of influence from Hindu traditions, Buddhism, and other lineages of internal practices that have also kind of led the way for me. But for me, it just got to a point where the question that I ask people when they come to work with me when it comes to their drinking, one of the questions I ask them is, what is the drink giving you? What is alcohol giving you? And they list almost identical things, every single person. It's giving me comfort. It's giving me connection. It's giving me relaxation. It gives me a sense of peace. It gives me something to look forward to. Like, that's a key one. If that's the main thing you're looking forward to in your life, then some stuff in your life needs to shift. And I think for many people who are working jobs that they don't love, the responsibilities of family and life build up. And so we're living these lives where the easiest way to feel like we're rewarding ourselves is to use this substance to change the chemicals in our body to give us a pretend sense of reward, a pretend sense of comfort, because we all know that if you have a few drinks, you might feel comforted for a few moments, but then the next day, probably quite the opposite.
And so, also opposite with the connection factor. We feel connected when we're drinking with people, but actually it just puts a barrier between us, you know?
Yeah, well, you quite literally lose your consciousness. Mm. You're not present. And as a sober person who socializes with people who've been drinking, you feel it. You feel those people disappear.
You really like, it's like you're
in a room full of half people in a sense, and it is quite lonely. Like
I know, you put it so beautifully, because it's sometimes hard to explain, even if they're not drunk necessarily. It's just that one or two, there is something in the middle there that you're not quite on that same level. But hey, I wanted to ask you about meditation, because I don't meditate, right? I practice mindfulness, and I do it quite actively every single day. I really work to ground myself often. I'll make sure I notice when I get stuck up here, and I'll ground myself. What are my hands doing? What can I hear? What can I taste? I do those sort of practices regularly, and it's made a big difference in my life. But I don't have a formal meditation practice. Mm-hmm. I don't sit for 20 minutes twice a day like you do and meditate. And I wanted to ask you, is that bad? Like, should I, or am I getting a good, you know, is the mindfulness enough?
It's definitely not bad to not be a meditator, but I couldn't live without it. I couldn't have made the changes without it. I couldn't have let all these coping mechanisms and things that were just keeping me stuck and restricted in my life go without my meditation practice. And I am
what does it do?
Forever thankful for it. So what happens when you meditate? It's a very complex process, but essentially what happens is, first of all, you sit in stillness, yeah? And the style of meditation that I teach and practice is self-sufficient. So you sit in silence, you sit with no distractions, and the stillness and the silence, first of all, tells your nervous system that you're safe. Mm-hmm. So it sends this beautiful signal to your nervous system, oh, okay, we're not moving, we're not going anywhere, there's nothing to do, we can start to relax.
I already feel...
as you start to relax, and as you have your eyes closed, you actually start to activate the part of your brain that becomes aware of your internal landscape. Yeah, so you start to notice sensation, feelings, emotions, whatever you want to call them. And then you also start to notice the thoughts percolating in your mind. And when I teach people to meditate, so I teach a really comprehensive three-part course, and the middle part of the course is all about helping people understand where those thoughts have come from, because 95% of the nonsense in our brains is conditioned. Mm-hmm. It's learned. Mm-hmm. And when you start to pay attention to it, you'll notice that it sounds like parents, it sounds like stuff someone else has told you, it might sound like your partner, it might sound like the echoes of the society that you live in. It'll tell you lots of shoulds, it'll tell you all these things that you need to be doing to keep up in the particular society that you live in. And a lot of those thoughts, the majority of those thoughts, come from a not enoughness, a lack, a fear, essentially. And so we have to learn to discern, essentially, discern what is nonsense and what deserves to be listened to. And another important thing that you start to learn when you meditate is that there's a relationship between what you're feeling. So if you're feeling tense and fearful, anxious, your thoughts are going to be tense and fearful and anxious. And the thoughts will probably be primarily based upon how to escape this feeling. How can I fix this feeling? How can I change? What can I do? Yeah. What can I do? What can I do? Yeah. As you start to relax, so you have this beautiful process that's happening. As you start to relax, the adrenaline, the cortisol starts to drop in your system, and you start to produce hormones that make you feel slightly different. It's a very subtle process. That's why it's not as attractive as going to the gym or doing something intense, because meditation asks you to pay attention to the nuance of your being. So you don't get that dramatic payoff that going for a run gives you, essentially. You get profound long-term payoff, and maybe only short-term, slightly different feelings when you open your eyes. You might feel slightly calmer, slightly more spacious, slightly more present, maybe sometimes a lot more. But that's one of the reasons for many people in this Western world where we want results real quick, real fast.
Well, and especially those of us who are used to boozing, because that is the quickest, you know, result you can get. Boom, dopamine.
It's not as attractive to have these subtle shifts, but they accumulate and they become full shifts in your personality traits eventually and long term. So you're calming your nervous system, you're integrating a lot of the unconscious triggers that you have stored in your body, that fight or flight has meant you have stored because it feels too vulnerable to feel these feelings.
Yeah.
But when you sit to meditate, you have this perfectly safe container for you to start to integrate some of the stuff, for you to really discern the nonsense from what is real. Although that is a very, very, very tricky thing to discern. Most of it is nonsense. and then over time, the more you do this, your nervous system knows, oh, I can relax. Oh, everything's safe. I can let these feelings come up. We can learn to feel them. And then we open our eyes and continue on with our day. I was actually just saying to some students this morning, because in the climate that we're in at the moment, where there's a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty and stability. My gosh.
I think I need this right now, honestly. Thank you so much. I feel tense. It's just too much. Everything, the pandemic, the protests, the studies I'm about to start, all the work I'm doing, it's like, my nervous system. I think I need to meditate, Claire.
Well, the thing is, when you meditate twice a day, it is impossible. It is impossible to get overwhelmed. It is absolutely impossible. You're literally destimulating your nervous system twice a day. So you have a little cleanse, everything clears itself up, and you see the world very, very differently when you do this consistently. The key word is consistently.
All right, I'm sold. And you have a beautiful way of articulating these things. And I'm going to link to your website, obviously, in this blog post around this, where I embed this video. I did just want to ask you also about the No Bears, Who Cares, I don't know what you call it, movement, organization that you run, because, you know, it's here at Living Sober, a lot of our members, they get to a point where they're drinking where things are really out of control. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I sort of feel like the No Bears, Who Cares type movement that you run is more for perhaps the sober curious or the grey area drinkers. I mean, what is it? What can you tell us about it?
It's actually for all of those people. Like it, when I started No Bears, Who Cares, so 5 years ago when I decided, you know, I had that New Year's Eve and I was like, I'm going to stop. I actually said to myself, just stop for another year. And then I just didn't start it. I just haven't started again. But I knew I would be lonely. I knew that I was going to have to make some new friends. I knew I was going to have to like find people on a similar page as me to help me stay the course. And I was 100% correct in that, because it is very hard to do this by yourself in the type of world that we live in, with alcohol so readily available. And so many people pressuring their mates to drink, you know, even if their friends have said, you know what, I'm just going to stop drinking for a while. The amount of pressure that people get from quite unexpected sources is profound. So I started No Bears, Who Cares as a way to meet people who were either had a problem like me with drinking, people who were trying to find other people who didn't want to drink, and the thing with No Bears, Who Cares was I started doing it in bars. Like, it was really important to me, and it has been really important on this journey for me to keep socializing, to keep meeting people, to keep getting out there. And I know for lots of people, they really needed to practice going to a bar, feeling the nerves of meeting new people, and then saying, hey, I'll have a lime and soda.
Yeah.
And then having that drink, feeling the experience of, oh, hang on, still sober, still present.
It's terrifying at first, though, right? It's terrifying at first.
To practice doing that together. And I had no idea how wonderful this experience was going to be. Like, it was... No Bears, Who Cares grew from, you know, 20 people meeting in a bar to events of like 250 people within the first year.
Oh,
and all spectrum of people. But at the kind of foundation of it was that they were people who wanted to do things differently, but felt like they needed support doing that and felt like they wanted to hang out with people who were like-minded. So that grew, and then it actually grew so much that it became incredibly overwhelming. And I also started having speakers at the events, and it was, I exhausted all the, well, I couldn't find any sober sport people. I was trying to find people who could talk about not drinking, but the positives. Like, No Bears, Who Cares was all about the positives of being sober. It was
That's what I'm always trying to do. Yes, we can talk about the gritty and the emotional stuff, but the other thing that we really need to do is promote and just be showing that you can live and have a great, fun, full life not touching alcohol ever, and be that kind of lamplighter for people who are still stuck.
Yeah, and I think that's because that's the place you, I call it a paradigm shift within the people I work with, because for many people, it takes a long time to get to a point where they really feel like they haven't lost a best friend. And then there comes a point with the people who really do start to leave it in the dust behind them, where they cannot see any positives to drinking, like zero positives.
Oh no, I feel like that. And sometimes I wonder, have I just forgotten what it feels like? Because I literally look at people drinking and I think, why? I don't see that anyone is having a better time than me when they're drinking. I certainly don't see that they're connecting better with themselves or others. I have zero pull towards that drug at all. And it's such a remarkable turnaround.
Oh, it's so remarkable. I say all the time to people, I cannot believe that I don't drink, and I can't believe that I sit in stillness twice a day, 20, 30, 40 minutes at a time. Like, it's really bizarre. It's bizarre that I managed to stick to it. It's bizarre that I now enjoy it. Like, to me, if, you know, the people who've known me my whole entire life must just be like, what happened? Oh, and it's so like, let me tell you what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's so great. And it's the work you do is really powerful and important. And so, you know, just keep it up, because any person that we can touch and sort of drag out of that place where you're disconnected and you're not grounded and you're not living, and it's such a cliched word, but you're not living authentically. Any person that can be pulled into the space, which is, yes, it's a bit grittier and trickier at times, but oh my goodness, the payoffs are so worth it. So all hail you, Claire.
Oh, thank you. Same to you. I know, it's a funny one. I send out a little newsletter to my meditators every Monday, and this week we've just had a really funny little COVID experience here, and there's been some other, like, a whole lot of stuff that's happening. I have a meditation center that I'm running, and I'm trying to do it remotely, and blah blah blah. There's lots of things that have happened in the last 4 days, and it was over a weekend, and I still have these moments of like, thank God I don't drink, because this would have been a shit show.
And also, by the way, you are pregnant. Congratulations.
Oh yes. So yeah, I will. And that's been an interesting thing, because when I was pregnant with my son, there was a moment where I'd started drinking again, then I stopped to have Jack, and then I started again when I came back here. But I haven't had any of the stopping with this one. It's just been, sailing on through.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, well, look, I once again, thank you so much for coming to chat to me here. I really appreciate it. And I know our members are going to get a great deal from it. We don't talk a lot about meditation on the site, but it does come up every now and then. And I do think that it's a practice that could benefit a lot of us. And I include myself in that. So once again, thank you so much, Claire. Any last words from you? Perhaps you could share with us what your favorite self-care action is, other than meditation. What's your favorite thing to do when you're feeling stressed?
Other than, do you know what? It's to read a novel.
Oh, yeah, nice.
It's to read a story. I've just read this beautiful book called Still Life by Sarah Winman, and it's about a woman, it's about a series of people who are over in Europe and Italy and London. And I love to have my imagination run free, because my work is all essentially self-help stuff. It's really nice to have that escapism, and I don't really enjoy TV, so that's wonderful. And then what else? I used to do a lot of infrared saunas until I got pregnant. Those and ice baths. So they are
One after the other, or just separately
at the same time. So you go sauna,
and
then hop in the ice, sauna, hop in the ice.
Oh wow.
It's as close as you can get to taking drugs without taking drugs.
Oh wow. Great tip.
Some really cool things happen in your brain and in your body, and it's really good for inflammation. It's really good for your immunity, and I'm all about taking care of my immunity at the moment. So another really good reason not to drink at the moment is for your immunity, you know?
Yeah, oh gosh, this pandemic. Anyway, let's not go there. Thank you very much. I'm going to wrap it up now, but I will include links to everything, as I said. And yeah, just once again, really appreciate you joining us, Claire.
My absolute pleasure. Lovely to meet you, Lotta.
See you.